situation.
You confront a situation. You are thrown into a certain situation, and obviously that situation is something new. Now, how is the mind trained to respond to that? What is the training that the mind gets to respond to that?
It has to be an initial experience of some description.
And sure, that's a challenge.
And I think certainly from karate, and probably it's true of other methods of training in the broadest sense of the word, that only with perseverance and a sense or a drive to hang in there no matter what the adversities or the difficulties may seem to you to be, that you do actually learn from it and become stronger in the learning.
But what do you learn? That is, in order to learn, you need a certain orientation. Otherwise, you might learn the wrong things from the right opportunities.
I think from karate, I learned two things. One is an incredible and frightening machine the human body is, that without anything but my body, I'm capable of achieving many things that people who don't train physically cannot do. Even when my body is very tired and wants to give in, the mind just keeps going. It won't let it give in. And through that, I become stronger all the time. I take a certain pride and joy in extending myself physically, because I don't understand what the word limit means. It seems to me that limit doesn't, it has no meaning for me, and I test that all the time. And mentally,
it frees you from limitation.
Often when I am almost inclined to despair, this training, I've seen what I can do when I've had to face a situation that would, perhaps in the initial few seconds, appears to be overwhelming. And instead of just standing there and saying, well, 10 people, or this problem is too much for me, I stop and remind myself that I'm a student of karate and I can face this.
Does it work like self-hypnosis or auto-suggestion?
Like self?
Hypnosis or auto-suggestion? Or is there a way by which, a special way by which you contact the energy or intelligence that is not limited?
I think it is for self-hypnosis. There is definitely a connection between the mind and the body, in that one is able to focus one's energy in a specific point. If I was to hit somebody, I can focus my mind through my body and concentrate or push all the energy that is me that manifests itself through my muscles into one point. So where in Western style fighting, where the boxers stand up and just punch, the object of karate physically, it's totally offensive. The object is to stop your opponent in one blow. And if you don't in actual fact do it in one blow, then you do so much damage that in a second blow. And in basic training, Australians and myself, you're very clumsy. You are not used. Australians or Westerners perhaps are not used to the flow between their energy and expressing that physically. When you watch people start to learn karate, they're very clumsy. They're not in harmony at all.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, something clicks, something, and you can feel the energy in your mind traveling through your body, and it just becomes automatic.
Mm.
It is a form of self-hypnosis.
And it's a form of harmony, harmonizing.
Yes.
Harmonizing oneself. It's a very interesting thing.
I don't know now almost, but I can distinguish between all my knowledge, where one starts and one finishes. It's when I start to talk about karate and you mention self-hypnosis, I then, all the learning that I've done about self-hypnosis, I have to stop and say to myself, well, did I learn self-hypnosis from karate or did I learn?
Mm.
We do this training sequence where everyone sits around the wall just like we are now, and Sensei will say, perhaps for me to come up and three other people, and it'll be a free fighting situation where I defend myself and or attack against three people, and then he'll tell two of them or three of them to sit down and pick three more people. So I'm progressively tiring myself.
Mm.
And then it becomes a mental thing. I must conserve myself physically and become stronger mentally. And it becomes a self-hypnotic thing then, I guess, in a sense that you operate almost, seems to operate anyway on a mental level, where I'll say to myself, China, it'll be all right. Do not stop. Become stronger.
Mm.
And when I think of becoming stronger, I become stronger.
Mm. Interesting. Thank you. Mm. Hmm? Very interesting. I don't know whether you were there then in Auckland. Mr. Astley took me to an Aikido performance. It's fantastic. One, you were there? In the room? There were a couple of Australians too, but one tiny little Japanese girl dealing with all sorts of quite hefty men, and chosen at random. She didn't know them. They were not performing. And that was explained to us later. It was based on a very fundamental philosophy that you let your opponent destroy himself by his own strength. So as somebody rushes towards you, you merely do a little bit of tripping movement and he goes and falls headlong, that sort of thing. It's very beautiful, very interesting. But again, as she said, there seems to be some kind of training by which you realize somebody is coming from behind. That is one thing which I could really understand. Or explain. how she knew that somebody was rushing towards her from behind. Just in time, she turned and tipped him off. But
we do a very interesting exercise where, again, it's a free fighting situation in the middle of the city, along the walls, and they turn the lights out. And again, it's inside. He just walks along and touches you on the shoulder. No words at all, just a touch. And then you stand up and you have maybe two, sometimes three, other people. And everything becomes alive. Your hearing, your sight, just even you, almost the picking up somebody else's energy where they are. You listen for everything, every movement, every sound.
That's it.
It's very sharp, very clear.
Training in attention. Training of attention, training in attention.
And you soon learn, I think, that the body can withstand a lot. Much more than you imagine it can withstand. When I read the stories of the yoga students sitting for days, not eating, not moving, I understand that very much. Because if your mind is strong and your body is used to being told what to do by the mind, then it's not as hard a thing to do.
It's very good. Thank you. Anyone wants to learn karate? It's good. Any form of discipline, it's good. It will teach you the same old truths. For half an hour you have been telling us that there is nothing difficult, and now suddenly...
Everything is contradictory.
Sorry. Thank you, my dear. Go on.
The concept of illusion and delusion. Really being tested right now for me. I feel like there's a war raging between everything that is inside me.
And?
Well, I'm feeling very...
No. And? War cannot be raging between everything inside me and... Or is the war between one faction within and another faction within?
But
is it a war between two factions within yourself, or is it a war between one faction within you and another outside you?
Words aren't even right, illusion and real.
How does how do these words, illusion and delusion, affect you in your daily life? Why do you want to find them?
Well, I was looking for the meaning of reality and fantasy. And I had...
No, wait a moment. You're looking for the meaning of the word reality and fantasy. Look, it's quite simple. The reality is, and the fantasy is not.
Well,
and therefore, you cannot look for fantasy. So, what is it I am asking that makes you look for fantasy in your life?
I don't think there is such a thing as fantasy.
There is?
I don't think there is such a thing as fantasy.
Forget it.
But again, I don't think there is such a thing as reality.
What are you looking at and asking yourself the question, is it real or unreal? Does that exist or not?
That is what I was asking, and the answer that I had was that there is no such thing.
As thing?
Yeah.
As the thing. As the thing that I am seeing when I am asking this question. That doesn't sound logical, first of all.
Perceive it to be fantasy.
No, I cannot. If I perceive it, it is real. What you perceive, I may not perceive at all. Not necessarily. What one believes to be true doesn't become true. There is truth which we should be aware of. And you are right, I was only questioning you unnecessarily. And this truth seems to be true in a certain definite way, defined way. And the truth is true, but the definition is only a belief system. And so the truth is true to everybody, obviously, whereas the definition is true only to the person who believes in the definition. Sure.
Give me an example.
There's a stone here.
Oh, I see. So but it's Venkatesha.
Wait a moment. But it is Lord, it is Venkatesha, it is a Murti, it is a deity and so on. And even that it is a stone may still be somebody's viewpoint, a definition. But that it is, nobody can deny. To me, it's a representation of a deity. To you, it's a lovely murti. To somebody else, it's the Lord. To someone else, it's just a piece of stone. To someone else, she's a nice, beautiful artist. To her, it's a beautiful piece of art. That's it. It is something, isn't it?
What is it? I don't know.
Well, it is. What are you looking at and asking the question? It is already suggests that something is. So that fundamental thing is true. Then we are trying to define it, each one according to his belief system. It has to be true, but it is not true as you define it. For instance, you, let's not talk of a tangible substance like stone. Let's talk about you had a brilliant vision last night. And to you it's the vision of God. You come and tell me. To me, it is not a vision of God. Which means as you are transmitting your experience to me, that experience is reconstructed within me. And I see it as hallucination. I see it again as hallucination. So, that experience which you had, which to you was the experience of God, is hallucination to me. So, can we remove these two opinions? The opinion that it is a vision of God, the opinion that it is hallucination, and contemplate if there could be in that something other than the vision of God or hallucination. That it is an experience. It was an experience. It is an experience.
Sorry.
Wait. Now, you and I come to that conclusion or understanding that this is or was an experience. Now you are asking a very brilliant question, just as you asked, how do you know that it is a stone? In relation to that experience, you can ask the question, how do you know that it was an experience? Is it true as an experience? Perhaps not, but the experiencer was true.
Exactly, so.
There was an experiencer. And it is the existence of the experiencer that is proved by the experience. And the existence of the experiencer is admitted by you and admitted by me.
That brings me back to what I said before. What is real, the vision to me was real. The vision to you was hallucination. It was a reality to me and a fantasy to you.
No. It is not a fantasy to me. It is my opinion that it was a fantasy, not just me. I didn't have the experience at all. You had it.
Your opinion.
My opinion is that it was a fantasy.
So what?
So, and therefore, without expressing that opinion, I sidestep the whole issue just one little bit. And if possible, pull you also across your own spectrum and persuade you to sidestep your opinion that it was a vision of God. Then we confront each other with this simple equation that it was an experience. That is accepted by me, by you. And suddenly it occurs to both of us that the experiencer was a reality. The experiencer in you, who saw the vision, and who explained the vision to me, and the experiencer in me who listened to the experience and who raised an opinion that it was a hallucination. To me, that experiencer again was real, and his opinion is dismissible, dispensable and dismissible. When that far we have gone and we have understood really, then the only thing that remains is what is experiencer. That experiencer is the reality in all experiences. I was just listening to a beautiful Vedic chant which describes the creation of this universe. Tat srishtva tadeva anupravishat. God, don't worry about the word. It has no meaning at all for this discussion. Created the entire universe and then entered into it. God creating the universe, let's say as a potter makes pots of clay of various sizes and various shapes and various colors and so on, diverse in their shapes and colors and value, but the potter doesn't enter into them. This creation is not comparable to the potter and the pot, but it's another, there's a mystery here. Having created all this, tadevanupravishat, he entered into them, and therefore everything is real. Now, instead of leaving us there, in which case you and I might fall into a trap of considering this microphone to be a reality, the book to be a reality, the table to be a reality, and get into some kind of hallucination. The author goes on, satyam cha anritam cha satyam abhavat. Because God entered into whatever was created, truth and falsehood became true. It's a fantastic statement if you understand what it means. So, in what is superficially called falsehood, illusion, hallucination, fantasy, there is an element of truth. What is the element of truth? That which has entered into this fantasy, that which enters into this hallucination is true. And what is that? The experiencer.
Well, that was better being my next question. So, the experiencer in me asks, what is the truth?
The experiencer is the truth.
So
turn around and bark back. Why on earth do you asking me this question? You are the truth. Thou art that.
So the experiencer always experiences the truth.
No, the experiencer is the truth, my dear. Not that the experiencer experiences the truth as if the truth was something other than it itself. That is where hallucination arises. Hallucination is born of the experiencer trying to experience a truth other than itself. That is hallucination. That is fantasy. And in our case, at present, all our experiences, either of the world or of the psychological categories or of what is called oneself or hallucinations or visions or fantasies, pleasures of this world or bliss of the supreme, all these are
pains, suffering and sorrow. All these are fantastic aids to direct our vision towards this experiencer. I'm delighted with your company. The delight is in me. And I admire you. Oh, Shana, aren't you marvelous? And you give me a karate chop. Toop. Shut up. I'm hurt. And that hurt is in me. I am the experiencer of the hurt. I am the experiencer of the delight at seeing you. I am the experiencer of the hurt when you hit me. I am the experiencer. That is the truth. It does not mean that therefore you are untrue. What am I seeing? Am I seeing a ghost? No. But the experiencer is the truth. By your presence and by the karate chop, you enabled the experiencer to be revealed. When the experiencer is awakened, not experienced as if he were an outside object, when the experiencer is awakened, then suddenly it realized that you are part of that experiencer. Or, as the Yoga Vasishtha puts it very beautifully, between me and you is the truth. Between the subject and the object is the truth, is the reality. And therefore, you are also right by saying that the reality is not something that is fixed and rigid. One can understand it as real. No, no. Only the reality can understand us. We cannot understand the reality. Is that right? The reality being something that between me and you. The reality looks at this and the reality looks at that. It is the reality that is looking at you and thinks it is me. And it is the reality that is looking at me and thinks from there that I am you. Clear? No, not clear. It is this reality that is sitting between us. I am one end of it, as it were. You are the other end of it. It's the reality that is sitting in me which calls you, you. And it is the reality that is at that end that calls me, you. Quite simple. Quite simple. We are not even we. Only it is. We are merely the two ends of the stick. Difference in mere polarity. That is the experiencer. And that is the experience. And that is the experienced. And there is no distinction between the three. There is no division. That is the experiencer, that is also the experience, and that is the experienced. When I say, I see you, the experience called sight enters into you. Why? Because it is connected already. Not connected, but one. the subject and the object being two poles of the predicate. The experiencing alone is the truth. That is obviously common. But since experiencing is the truth, it is not a static phenomenon which you can hold in your hand. I belong to it, it doesn't belong to me. Correct? I belong to it, it doesn't belong to me. And therefore I cannot hold it, it can hold me perhaps. So, as an experience arises, it holds me at one end and you at another end. And as another experience arises, it holds you at one end, me at another end. An experience called pleasure arises, it holds the mind at one end and the experience or pleasure at the other end. That goes up, moves on. Another experience called pain arises, at one end is me, at the other end is pain. A $1 million question then is, that if truth is not a static thing which can be held, am I a permanent entity that goes from one experience to the other, as you being a permanent entity go from this room to the other room? Or is an experiencer thrown up with every experience? I don't think it is possible to verbally answer this question or find a verbal answer to this question or conceptual answer to this question.